Welcome to the new All In Foods podcast from the Food Decisions Research Laboratory. Food is a defining element of our existence. Gaining a deeper understanding of what food means to us as individuals can help inform us and create empathy and appreciation for one another. This is All In Foods.
Hi, my name is Amit Sharma at the All In Foods Studios of the Food Decisions Research Laboratory at Penn State School of Hospitality Management. Welcome to this podcast from University Park, Pennsylvania. As we battle with the COVID-19 pandemic, through this podcast, we want to continue bringing to you insights that'll guide you and all of us to make informed food decisions. Furthermore, we also want to continue highlighting the importance of the Sustainable Development Goals that remind us the importance of sustainable choices and decisions we make in our day-to-day lives that eventually sum up to impact all of us around the globe. For instance, in today's podcast, we will hear about making food accessible while also ensuring sensible and trustworthy processes for preparing food by employees and then making them available in a safe and secure manner for consumers. Therefore, Sustainable Development Goals number 2 and 12 that emphasize the importance of ensuring zero hunger and responsible consumption and production will be most aligned with today's discussions. As you are aware by now, food service industry workers are currently amongst all others at the very forefront of dealing with this crisis. People still need to eat food, and food production and service workforce is making sure this continues to happen. There are special groups of individuals that particularly are at risk of not having food or access to food. Amongst those are school and university students. In today's podcast, we will talk to two individuals who are part of this special group that are ensuring food access and security for many of us. So in today's podcast, I'm going to talk to Mr. James Meineke, who's the Associate Director of Residential Dining, and also Mr. James Richard, who's the Director of Residential Dining both are at Penn State University. Welcome to you both to the All In Food Studios. It's a pleasure to have you on our show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Amit.
So, Jim, I'm going to refer to you as Jim, and Mr. James Richard. Okay, if I call you JR?
Absolutely, sir.
Great. So, I'll open these discussions to you both, and let you both jump in as you see appropriate. Let me first start with a little bit on you telling us about what's the status of your operations so far. So can you tell us what's happening with university dining? Are you still open and are there still students on campus?
Yeah, actually we are still open. There are still approximately 300 students on campus. Of course, in the current situation, some of our students cannot actually go home. So we're in the business of serving them, and they're with us. So we are open and serving those 300 students who are on campus residing with us.
JR, are any of these students also from international? Are they international students, or are they mostly domestic students?
Sure, international students make up the bulk of that, but we have students across all demographics residing with us as well. So there are some international students, there are some domestic students, there are some students in the state of Pennsylvania where this is their safe haven, and they're staying with us, so we're taking care of them.
So, as part of the dining, as a residential dining, the students have access to several types of outlets for food, for their food needs. Have you seen any changes in students' attitudes or preferences when it comes to, food that's available through you?
I think the biggest thing that we've seen is a change, which isn't surprising, is that the number one concern at this point is safety. And since spring break, our operations changed a little bit where we started off upstairs, and it was really trying to be mindful of having as the fewest contact points possible. So not having our cashiers handle the ID cards and, having our staff handle the to-go box and really doing one handoff. for that. And it's kind of morphed into Market Pollock at this point, which has been, again, mostly contactless and, you know, putting in what you want from a kiosk and picking it up. So really, I think our the biggest things we've seen is that, you know, people are really focused on that safety part, both from our staff standpoint and our customer standpoint. And so we're still trying to operate and serve the best quality food and service we can with those new kind of guidelines.
Now, I'm guessing that not all operations are open or are necessary. So you probably have limited outlets that are open for students.
Yeah, correct. We have one outlet, JR? Market Pollock, that outlet is serving both hot food, lunch and dinner, and then there's a grocery store component associated with that outlet as well, where the students can actually shop and cook in their residence if they desire to do so.
I see. Now, you know, that's the student side of things. Obviously, you need your colleagues, your staff to do the production and the service. Tell us a little bit about how you are dealing with the production aspects and the service aspects in this climate. How are you managing the operation? And how's the staff feeling about all of this, Jim?
So yeah, I mean, to be honest, the Pollock staff's been great through this whole experience. So you know, they really take pride in their job and take it very seriously. So whether it's the management team or our technical service employees, you know, that they realize how important it is. And we've tried to relate to them when we get feedback from the, you know, the students that are remaining. They're obviously taking comfort in the meals that we're providing. So I think they really take that to heart and you know, they're being mindful of their own kind of safety and that sort of thing, but they're really taking pride in their work. We're trying to show as much appreciation as possible, you know, through thank yous and different cards and different kind of things that we can provide for them each week as kind of a pick-me-up. But it's definitely a weird experience for JR and myself to be having to do this remotely, you know, check-ins via Zoom and phone call and really trying to take to heart the, you know, the social distancing piece and not being on campus right now. It's definitely been one of the hardest parts, I think, for us, you know, in this transition period.
Mm. JR, just to give us a sort of a glimpse of how the food service staff is operating in these social distancing recommendations. How does that work out?
Well, as you can imagine, they're a little bit trepidatious about what the new norm is.
Right.
But they've done an excellent job. Our staff is wonderful, and they've risen to the occasion quite a few times. As you know, we're not now where we were just 3 weeks ago. So much changes even in a day, given the CDC guidance and the governor's guidance and the national response. They're doing very well at social distancing. So as you can imagine, we don't have our full contingent of employees with us. So we've dropped the number of staff down. So social distancing makes sense. Mm-hmm. There's enough room in the kitchen that they can maintain that space as they need to. We're just now coming up to speed with the new guidance around masks and PPE and things of that nature. So they're doing a great job of that. So it looks different than what they're used to, mm-hmm. but they're still reporting, still serving, and still are very much committed to our students who are with us.
Now, are there any special considerations or changes you've had to make on the service side of things?
Absolutely. It looks a lot different than it used to. So we've been everywhere from installing plexiglass barriers to taping out marks on the floor that indicate 6 feet of distance. We've changed the way that we accept payment. So that's all students on their own running the kiosk. So we're not handing off ID cards and transferring those germs that we're not supposed to transfer. So yeah, there's a lot of visual cues that indicate the safety measures that have been installed since we began our social distancing experiment.
And tried to be a lot more mindful too about the cleaning process. I mean, we always took it seriously before, but there's three or four different checklists at this point. So every hour we're wiping down the main touch points, so railings and countertops, that type of thing, and checking restrooms more frequently, when particularly when service was still upstairs and that type of thing. So we're doing that a lot more frequently than we even did in the past to try to put our customers at ease when they're coming in.
You know, there was a reference that I think one of you made to sort of hand touch devices, and I remember that was an important aspect of, you know, before the COVID pandemic. That was an important part of food service operations because, you know, today's generation prefers ordering online, using apps, et cetera. And it seems like you're sort of turn away from the touch devices. Am I correct in understanding that or not?
Well, they're all, it actually is on the customer at this point. So they've always ordered through a kiosk at Market Pollock before, and they're still doing that piece of it in our current service model. But we always had a cashier in the front, and that cashier obviously would be ringing up their items. The big change for us is that we turn those screens around as well. So if you're a customer and you're shopping in our store and picking up bread and milk and cereal, you're scanning your own items similar to kind of a self-checkout at the grocery store, and you're swiping your own card so that we avoid passing the ID card back and forth and that type of thing. And those cashiers and our managers are still around 6 feet away at least, but they're checking to make sure that there aren't any issues and that you know, the students are not having any problems with the scanning part of it. And then they're wiping the screen down and the swipe and that whole area more frequently. So, that we do have more of those kiosks, I guess, in use at this point, but we're trying to wipe them down more frequently. And we decided to go that route, like I said, to try to not have the passing back and forth piece. So,
understood. For our listeners, here's a little quiz. And as usual, I will get you the answer at the end of the podcast. Schools, colleges, and university dining services are based on an early format of food service operation. What is this type of food service called? So I will share the answer with you at the end of the podcast. So continuing with our discussion, now given that the production and service happens at a large scale, you know, there are other challenges that you face, or you probably would be facing. What might those be at this time? You know, there's obviously this issue related to staff and the social distancing and the consumers. What else? What's sort of creating those challenges for you?
Well, as you can imagine, we were set for a return of 50,000 students or so to campus at the end of spring break. And that pipeline has to be very vibrant and robust in order to supply the amount of food that's necessary for those 50,000 people to make the choices that they want to make. So one of our biggest challenges was how we slam shut that supply line, so to speak, when the announcement is made that you're now going to remote learning, and it's taken on now at least a month of that decision. So things like, what do we do with perishable food that was already in that pipeline? What do we do with the supply that was due to arrive to our warehouse or to our docks? Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of work that went into right-sizing the operation according to our new normal.
Mm. So what did you, just to be curious, what did you do with the food that was already there in your refrigerators?
Jim can elaborate, but we've been successful in helping out the community quite a bit. So that food that wasn't going to be usable by us, either because of date or perishability, we actually got out to the community, was able to assist some folks in the community with that, contacting vendors and canceling shipments, changing menus to equal the product that was already in the warehouse. So there's been a lot of work that went into what we do with that food. So,
Yeah, it was a, I would say it was a very big group effort in the first couple of weeks to try to react and to reutilize as much of that as we could. So I think the two biggest groups that we worked with was the Central Pennsylvania Food Bank and then the State College Area School District, which is still offering breakfast and lunch each day. So, you know, the warehouse was great to be able to make some of those deliveries, and our units did a great job of organizing and seeing what they had that was going to go out of date that, that Pollock couldn't use. So we tried to consolidate and bring everything to Pollock first, and then whatever else we couldn't use that way, kind of had a list and really tried to at least help out the community in a difficult time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that sounds very heartwarming that, you know, there was a time for need for other people, and you were able to come in and help. I know this sounds premature while we are still dealing with this day-to-day challenge, these day-to-day challenges and the crisis, but looking back at a time not so long ago when we, you know, the students almost had instant and plenty of access to food. We're now sort of in a different environment. Do you think the food service industry and consumers might learn something out of this experience as we live through this pandemic?
Yeah, I think, you know, who knows how long it'll last, but I think, you know, we've already started to have discussions and look not only at summer, but at fall 2020 and what that looks like for our students. And, you know, we're on weekly webinars and we're talking to other schools and we're looking at how things are going to kind of be. But, you know, I think for the foreseeable future, it's, you know, safety is going to still be the number one thing. And who knows what August will look like, but I don't think it's a far stretch to know that social distancing is going to stay. And we're already looking at things like, can we even do a self-serve all you can eat option anymore, and trying to figure out what that looks like. And do we need to install plexiglass in certain areas, and how do we avoid having lines queue up and that type of thing. So, you know, I think operationally things are going to look a lot different, and I'm sure that'll be the case for a while. And I think from a consumer standpoint, I think our students in a lot of cases are going to be more mindful about their purchases and kind of the money aspect of it. So, you know, we're looking at trying to, you know, put some more affordable combo items in our stations and different things to offer some of the variety still, but to do it at an affordable price. So we're trying to think ahead about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. JR, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's going to change our world forever, quite frankly. You know, there's a lot of things that we had set up for speed of service and throughput, and we're rethinking those now based on whether we can have self-service areas, as Jim alluded to, or what the queue looks like for access, entry into our units, things of that nature. If you think about it, you know, the architectural standard for seating area was 15 square feet per chair, per seat. And if you take social distancing and overlay that, we now need 36 square foot per seat, right? Just doing the quick math in that equation. So all of a sudden, the density of our seating areas become an issue that we weren't necessarily facing before. So I think our consumers are going to learn very quickly what the bottlenecks were. But again, I agree with Jim. I think safety is going to be paramount. So that 6 foot social distancing is going to be with us for a while, you know, and it has applicability as far as our guests' satisfaction is concerned. So we're going to have to figure out a system that gets the throughput and still maintains. So our queues are going to look different, but they're going to be longer. Hopefully they'll be just as fast.
Mm-hmm. Of course, yes. You know, I it's a bit humorous that oftentimes you're finding on social media that people are finally learning how to wash hands. So hopefully we'll see more of that from our consumers.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that'll be a focus for sure. And, you know, even before everything got to the level it is now, we tried to put a lot more hand sanitizing stations and different things like that. So whether we try to put more hand washing stations in, it's something we're looking at a little bit too, but definitely a lot more hand sanitizing stations. And we know people are going to be a lot more mindful of that.
So, So one last question for you both. Many of our, you deal with the very high volumes of production and service, but many of our listeners, we make food decisions on a day-to-day basis and now in a far more constrained environment, just like you are doing. Any suggestions or advice for all others, all of us?
I think you need to be cognizant of the waste that was in your food system individually. And as you can imagine, we need to pay attention to that as well. But, statistics indicate 30 to 40% of our food purchases are wasted on any given day. So I think if individually you can figure out how to manage that factor, it means going to the grocery store once every other week as opposed to weekly, or once every other day as opposed to daily. So if you can reduce those risk visits by 50% or so just by managing waste, learning to preserve, don't let your leftovers languish in the refrigerator, but freeze or somehow keep for later. Those kind of things I think are going to be paramount to being successful in the lessened access I think that's upcoming for our future.
Yeah, I would just say that, this situation's forced us for a lot of reasons to plan better. Mm-hmm. So as JR alluded to, trying to only go once a week to the grocery store where, me personally, I would have gone three or four times a week just because I say, oh yeah, I forgot I needed this. And, so if you're playing it out, I mean, from a carbon standpoint, I'm sure the environment is a lot happier that we haven't been driving as much. So, I mean, you're not going to the grocery store four times and bringing your car out and also, I mean, obviously the social distancing and the safety aspect of it. And, I think if you're doing a better job planning, you're not having the opportunity to waste as much because you're being mindful of this is what I'm going to have for dinner tonight. And this is what we're planning is for the next night. So, you're not having as many opportunities to have that stuff go to waste. So hopefully it all plays together. And that's something that we carry through, even when we get past this.
Really good points and good advice. Hopefully a few silver linings on these really strange and unusual times. Thank you both for sharing your insights. This has been really interesting and fascinating, and I'm sure our audience also got a lot out of this. And before we leave, the answer to my question, on September 4th, 1885, the Exchange Buffet opened in New York City, which happened to be the first self-service restaurant in the United States. Then later, during the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, entrepreneur John Kruger built an American version of the smorgasbords from his experience of traveling in Sweden and called it the cafeteria, the Spanish for coffee shop. Later, this format of food service was also popularized by the Child's restaurants that had hundreds of locations in the US and Canada by the 1920s. Together, these early creations led to the popularization of the cafeteria-style food service concept that were only overtaken by fast food and casual dining experiences in 1960s through 80s. While the early ideas featured simple and light menu options, today's college and university dining food options can be quite elaborate, as I'm sure Jim and JR would qualify, and plentiful. Or shall we say, at least they used to be until a few weeks ago. Jim, JR, thank you both for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. Thanks.
And to the audience, as always, make safe and informed food choices, as you just heard. And above all, please stay healthy and cheerful. Until next time, from the All In Food Studios, this is Amit Sharma. Thank you for listening.